So this is one of Melbourne's very important high-rise buildings. And so we're starting in the 1980s with Harry Seidler, who was one of Australia's most eminent modernist architects. And this is Melbourne's only Seidler high-rise building. There are a couple of other smaller scale buildings that Seidler did. This is a very important piece by an architect who came from Sydney. And I say he came from Sydney, but in fact he was trained in Austria. So Seidler brought with him to Australia when he came here a European sensibility. Yes.
And an American as well, because he also studied Gropius in the United States. So he had both a European and an American background.
That's very true. And in fact, some of the buildings we're going to be looking at show that shift from a European sensibility from some of the architects into this idea of celebrating the contemporary city that we see in America.
Yeah. And this building is today recognized as an icon for the city. It's also heritage listed, but there's a bit of a controversial story behind it, right? It wasn't exactly applauded. Well,
Seidler had this amazing opportunity, and this is the entry to Melbourne. This is the corner of the Hoddle Grid. So it's the southeastern corner of the Hoddle Grid. A typical Melbourne architect would do a building that hit the corner and we would have a square corner building. Seidler, this was very radical because, in fact, it's a curved building. It addresses the southeast corner with a curve. And I understand the city of Melbourne was not particularly happy about that because it's not what we would do if we had a Melbourne architect do it. But, in fact, so it suited Seidler's more curvaceous forms. He was a good architect to bring onto this job because this is not the first building of this type that he did. There are several buildings in Sydney that have the same sort of curvaceous forms. And yet Melbourne thought it was a bit radical for the corner. But in fact, what is interesting about it is underneath this corner was the first underground that Melbourne did. So the loop that is our first underground train loop scoots across this corner. This is one of the curves. So in fact, unless you had done some major structural sort of skillful thing across the edge of the tunnel, you couldn't have built on the corner anyway.
That's right. And the S-shaped, I suppose, also was a great way to produce a house for Shell, the corporate owner, which obviously liked it very much in this curved shape, which opens to the east. In fact, for us today here is in the morning is getting this beautiful sunlight, but it's also providing views towards the bay. So it's both a response to the underground condition, as Jill pointed out, where you couldn't possibly put foundations on it, as well as opening up towards the bay views and the eastern views on the park.
It's also a very unusual tower type in that it has a core that is sitting at the back, and then the building wraps its way around the core. So what we have is a very interesting floor plate where the office space sweeps its way around from the east to the south and fantastic views right down towards the river and to the south there. So it's what we call a radial floor plan around the core. And look, the other thing I think is amazing about this building is the way Seidler introduced the ground plane. And it's really got this... It's an urban statement. And what you find is that the topography of the ground sweeps in, under and through the building, and in fact right through the building to Flinders Lane. And there's a great little staircase that sneaks up from Flinders Street to Flinders Lane as a public staircase. So I always see this as a fantastic way of almost providing something public in the city on the ground plane, which is, a good building should do that, should offer something to the city.
And so Seidler was very keen to maintain the modernist idea of the freestanding tower surrounded by plaza with artwork. And he did so brilliantly, not only here in Spring Street, but also opening towards Flinders Lane, which is quite interesting because he invites people to use the base of a private building into a public one. In fact, there's a theatrette, there are different opportunities for people to be part of this private building, even if it's...
And one of the nice things about Melbourne is that we nick through buildings. We've got this tertiary network of pedestrian laneways and through building links. And this one's got that same idea that you can nick through the building, skip the corner And if you know Melbourne and you know the kind of tertiary networks that exist through the buildings, this is one of my little shortcuts. Seidler brought the idea of a fantastically designed high-rise to Melbourne, or actually also to Sydney, obviously, but he was one of the architects from the 60s and 70s in Melbourne that elevated the high-rise as a very important architectural type. It's one of our high-rise buildings that is a genuinely beautiful building. It's not just a good street wall with a tower on top of it. It's actually a beautiful, tall building.
Yes, and it's environmentally responsive too, considering most tall buildings have notoriously problems with wind and downwash that can make the plazas and the surrounding spaces not quite welcoming. But in this instance, Seidler, working with the wind engineer, was very careful to provide an environment that is still accommodating the pedestrians' presence. And for example, some of the sculptures were located in the spots where the downwash would have been too high, for example, or towards Flinders Street, there's an elevated garden with trees that also prevents to have that nasty wind sweeping down the footpath and disturbing passers-by.
Always one of the problems with a high-rise city is wind on the ground plane. And, yeah, Melbourne's notorious for its winds. I think that's fascinating that the shell sculpture, which is actually a beautiful piece by an artist called Charles Perry. And I find that interesting because the building was the shell building for the corporation. And obviously the sculpture is representative of that. But it will, even though the corporation doesn't own this building anymore or occupy it, the shell is always a reminder for those that understand the history of the building. And yes, it's located in the worst wind part, apparently. But I think also the facade of the building is very sculptured, and that would help the wind as well.
Yes, it would. The curved profile would make it less adverse to downdrafts.
I also really like the way the scattered balconies across the facade. It's quite a consistent facade, but there's a couple of points where the balconies just break that up and they provide really interesting occupiable spaces on the facade.
They're kind of the winter gardens of some sort.
They are winter gardens.
Sky gardens of some sort. Very, very characteristic of Seidler's architecture.
Yep. The other thing that's important about this building, we've talked about the artwork, the sculpture. Internally, it's got a very important artwork as well. So in the foyer, there's a mural by Arthur Boyd and it's called Pulpit Rock Bathers and Muzzled Dog. And again, the public gets to see that because if all you need to do is walk and you can see it through the glass foyer. And it's a very beautiful piece by an Australian artist.